Welcome to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Now, your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're back for another fun-filled episode of the M Squared TechCast. And lucky for you, so are we.
Yeah, well, at least I'm here again. Now, you were doing an LTU thing last week.
Yeah, I was off.
Everyone was worried.
Last week
we heard you were called into the provost's office.
It was just a meeting. It was an all-hands
type meeting. No spanking was involved in anything.
No, well, that could be good or bad. I'm not sure. So we'll leave that.
We're already
right there.
Going in the wrong direction. So let's get back on the right direction.
Yes, I get back on the right track.
Yes. Yeah. So we have in studio today, we have Richard Laramie. I got that right, right? I'm horrible with names. President of Electromatic Ventures, and he's going to be talking about the Manufacturing in America conference coming up next week at the Rensen.
Sounds cool. So tell us, Richard, where is Electromatic Ventures? Where is it based?
Well, we're headquartered out of Farmington Hills.
Okay. And what is the company? How long has it been around? What does it do?
Well, since 1969, Electromatic has helped transform American industry by supplying automation components and solutions to the leading manufacturers. Today, Electromatic continues to leverage that value of emerging technologies by developing practical applications.
Okay, so this is, you supply auto suppliers then, right?
That's correct.
Okay, with automation equipment, what, stuff that automates various robots, manufacturing processes, that kind of thing?
Very much so. Automation, controls, motion, drives.
Okay.
And let's talk a little bit about manufacturing in America. I tell Michelle Hirschfield brought this up with me about a month or so ago. I was not aware of it. And so I assume probably other folks may not be either. So why don't we talk a little bit about what's going to be going on at the Rensen next week?
Well, we've been doing the Manufacturing America for nearly 12, 13 years now.
Good.
And it used to rotate. About 4 years ago, we settled in on Ford Field. And the last 3 years, we're at Ford Field. This year, it's at the Detroit Marriott, now in the Rensen Center.
Mm-hmm.
We're expecting over 2,500
Wow.
manufacturing executives and engineers and enthusiasts.
That's a big
event. Yeah, big.
Yeah. So is it a trade show type thing with a trade show floor, keynotes and breakouts and that kind of thing? Or what's the agenda?
Well, it's really a knowledge sharing event. We have a summit, which is a presentation from keynote speakers in the morning of the first day. throughout the whole event, both days, there are well over 100 seminars, learning experience. You can come and sit through anywhere from an hour to 2 days worth of one class. And then also there's well over 50 exhibitors presenting the newest technologies.
Yeah, I know I'm going to be there the second day shooting some video interviews. But I'll get there early so I get a chance to walk around and see what's going on, because we're always interested in what the latest is in technology, particularly since we're a manufacturing state, what's going on in manufacturing technology. So that will be good.
Great.
So tell us a little bit about Electromatic Ventures, a little bit more. Give me some specific examples of what it is you guys do.
Well, primarily we're a distributor for electrical equipment. However, we also manufacture some of our own products, such as LED lighting and LED signage, where some of our main lines are Siemens and Turk and Rittal. These are mainstay names in the manufacturing industry.
Okay.
So tell me a little bit about the company in terms of employment. How many employees do you have?
Well, as of Thursday, we now have about 250. We just acquired a company down in Ohio.
Okay.
Well, tell us about that.
The company was called RAF Fluid Power. They are also another distributor of different product lines. They have Festo, Cognex, Universal Robots, to name a few.
Well, I've got to ask him the Rausch question, right?
Oh, okay. Go right ahead.
All right. Okay. So I always ask, and this actually grew out of the last recession where nobody was hiring and everybody was looking for work. So now I always ask people, are you hiring? And if so, what skill sets are you looking for?
Yes, we are hiring. We have several open spots, primarily in the technical support level from a technician up through engineers and sales.
Okay. What kind of engineers are you looking for?
Could be mechanical, electrical.
Okay.
A lot of openings, or just some, or what are we talking?
I would say offhand, probably three or four spots open right now.
And, well, we should probably follow up on that. If somebody's out there listening and they think they have the skill set, how do they apply?
Well, they can go to our website, and there's an electro-matic.com, and there's a spot there. They could also show up at Manufacturing America. There'll be opportunities there.
Let's circle back around to the show. Now, is that a free show, or people pay to get in, or what?
It's a free show, completely free show.
And again, let's get the website on that. Do you have the website where they can sign? Do they have to register in advance? Or?
They do. They do. We do request you register in advance. Attendmia.com is the actual site for the show itself, but you can also get to it from electro-matic.com.
Okay.
Okay. There's a lot of talk these days about, you know, manufacturing jobs in America, bringing manufacturing jobs back to America.
Yeah, I think the president ran on that platform.
Yeah,
didn't
just
he?
A little bit. Yeah. So I'm just wondering, you know, how you think that happens. What you know, what do we need to do to make that happen?
That's a good question. We need to get kids more interested in staying in that field. We do several things. In fact, one of the days at Manufacturing America is a student day.
Huh. Mm.
And last year we invited, and when you say student, there's all kinds of students. Certainly we have a lot of universities there, and Lawrence Tech will be there.
Oh, sorry.
That's a shameless plug bell.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry. You didn't
plug
even tell
my
me
employer.
About that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyhow, but the student day is really for high schoolers. We need to get students earlier on interested in manufacturing. It isn't as dirty as everybody seems to think it is. Manufacturing is very exciting these days.
That's one of the things I heard. I think it was from the governor or maybe from the MEDC a while back, was that people thought of manufacturing as the three Ds, you know, dirty, dangerous, and dull.
Well, it was when I was a kid, but yeah. It
changed a lot.
Well, yeah, now it's like a clean room. You go in there, everything's white. They're wearing bunny suits, you know, so it's really it's much different environment than it was. And I think also there's a sort of a stigma attached to manufacturing with a lot of kids. They think it's low-paying and drudgery and all that, but that's not really the case anymore, is it?
No, not at all. We're really trying to change that impression. Last year at the Student Zone, we had about 80 students from Macomb, Oakland, and Washington, I think. Anyhow, down to the show. This year, we're expecting more than 150 kids coming down, just enjoying it, meeting with experts, looking at the, you know, they get to play hands-on with the real technology.
Hmm. Okay. And this is high school level?
Yes, these are ninth through 12th graders.
All right.
So STEAM, we added the A in there for the arts because Matt and I are liberal arts guys. So, but no, we didn't add that. That was added when that started coming up a couple years ago.
Automation Alley, I think, is part
that
of that.
In, but
so, yeah.
For Matt, that's architecture. For me, that's the arts because I'm an old poli sci and English major. What can I say?
Yeah.
But so STEAM, you guys are real big in STEM, STEAM, whatever you want to call it, right?
Yeah. Aside from the student day we've been doing, we've also support a couple of FIRST robotics teams, Northville's, what are they called? RoboStangs and Sterling Heights Thunder Chickens.
Yep.
Yeah. So both of those.
I have heard of both those teams.
Have you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We'll have to get the Thunder Chickens in here. That could be fun. You know?
Yeah. I've done some emceeing work on for FIRST Robotics events, and that's a fantastic
program. You
emcee
everything. I mean, yes, well, holy cow.
Well, I tell you, there are several robotics programs. There's FIRST Robotics. There's VEX Robotics. There's RoboFest, which came out of C.J. Chung, the professor at Lawrence Tech, once again.
Yeah,
just
go ahead. Very light that time.
Yeah, well, that was just sort of in passing. So, okay. You know, but all of these things, you know, teach these kids how much fun it can be to put science to work, you know. And I think that's what we've got to do is, you know, because the beginning of an engineering curriculum in college is not much fun. It's like calculus and physics and stuff.
Well, that was my freshman year. That's when I decided not to be an engineer.
Really heavy stuff.
I had calculus and physics. And I don't think so. So.
Well, what they're trying to do now, what schools from LTU to you know, Michigan State, I know, does this. I'm sure Michigan does as well. They're trying to introduce more of the fun problem solving parts of engineering earlier and earlier and earlier.
Right.
I know there's a.
This is the reason why you're doing this stuff is so you can do this stuff.
Right exactly. Yeah. And they will have students design a project, develop it, manufacture it, and pitch it, and try to sell it, and they might actually make some money. You know, if this turns out to be something good,
yeah.
I know that's
making
the case.
Making money
at
is good.
Yeah, well, that's the idea. So I mean, you know, there's more and more of that in the engineering curriculum, and you know, that's a good part of it because I think that's might be why engineering and manufacturing got that kind of rap. Is the beginning of it is like boot camp.
God.
You know,
Yeah, I was. That's when I had a blistering C plus average, I think. And I said, I just don't think this is working out. Yeah. So moved on. But we digress again. So let's talk a little bit about, you have a partnership with Siemens. What's that all about?
Well, we're a Siemens distributor, actually one of the largest in North America. We have been since, I think, 1995. We distribute all their products from automation, motion control, industrial control products, power, motors.
Real heavy duty stuff. But it powers the manufacturing, it powers our electrical systems, grids, and all that jazz.
That's correct. Some of the drives range all the way from a quarter horsepower up and above 10,000 horsepower.
Whoa. So
some very sizable stuff. We also have a whole technical staff to support all this. Well over 15 to 18 technical sales, or not technical sales, but technical staff that will help you design and implement systems.
Huh.
All right. Now, did your company change names, or is there a holding company involved? Because I know that part of your title is Electromatic Products and part of it's Electromatic Ventures.
Yeah,
What's the difference between them?
Actually, a couple of years ago, we created Electromatic Ventures as a holding company. And with inside that, we have Electromatic Visual, which is our subsidiary that does LED lighting and LED signage. You might see some billboards, those electronic billboards.
Mm-hmm.
We manufacture those here in Farmington Hills. Electromatic Products is primarily our distribution company. And that is products such as Siemens, Rittal, Turk, Fortress, a few other lines. We have Electromatic Integrated, which is a light integration company that does special products for us. And then, as I mentioned on Thursday last week, we purchased a company called RAF Fluid Power, which now is a subsidiary in Ohio called RAF Automation.
Boy, LED lighting has just taken off like crazy, hasn't it?
Oh, yeah. Very popular discussion.
I changed all my bulbs in my condo to LEDs. So, I suppose it's going to save me some money, but boy, them things were a little expensive on the upside. But the downside is they last forever and they're energy saving.
I was going to say, right? I still got a closet full of compact fluorescent bulbs I'm waiting to burn out before I make the switch to LEDs. That was sort of the intermediate step there.
Yes,
you know?
It was. So. Hey, we only got about a minute left. Why don't we talk a little bit more about, Richard Laramie is the COO of Electromatic Ventures, as we mentioned before. He's an old GMI graduate, the old now known as Kettering. And so you've been doing this for a very long time, right?
Yeah, with Electromatic since 1997.
Wow, there you go.
Okay, so if people want more information about Electromatic, where do they go again?
Electro-matic.com.
M-A-T-S-C. And you guys are hiring, so I'd check that out. And also, the big shoe here next week, Manufacturing in America, give us that URL one more time to register.
AttendMIA.com, and that's next Wednesday and Thursday.
Yes, 22nd and 23rd, right?
Correct.
All right. Well, thank you, Richard Laramie. Thanks for the fun information. For right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M-Squared TechCast. We'll be right back. It's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we're back with another fun-filled segment of the M-Squared TechCast.
And calling in, I think from Florida, is David Cole. So many titles, David. Which one should I use with you?
Oh, just I'm alive.
That works.
How about just auto industry guru?
Yes. If you read Wall Street Journal or Fortune magazine articles,
I wasn't smart enough to get away from the auto industry when I could.
Yes. Well, you are away. You're down in Florida. We're getting a blizzard up here, so count your blessings, right?
Well, we're coming back on Wednesday, so make sure that the snow is all melted.
Yeah, we'll get it all cleaned up.
Yeah, it's supposed to be up in the 40s by Thursday, so I think you might be okay.
That's good.
All right.
So I ran into David at the auto show in January, and I said, you know, I think it would be fun to have you on our show every month to talk about what's happening with autos and auto tech and things like that. And so he gave me a whole long list of stuff we can talk about. I'm not sure if we'll get through it all, but one of them you mentioned right off the get-go was the sale of Opel and Vauxhall by GM.
That's right. Yeah, they've had some relationship for some time, goes back a number of years. And I think finally GM realized that the purpose of the business that they're in is making money for their shareholders. And with the accumulating losses that they've had and the tremendous complexity of the European market, things associated with Brexit, uncertainties in the economy, extremely competitive environment, some very tough regulations, the deal with PSA, Peugeot, and it makes sense, I think. But that's only a step. We don't know what's going to happen in the next steps. And this industry is not where it needs to be in terms of a competitive position. So this is just a step and a long stairway.
Well, now I hear the Scots are talking about going independent and leaving the UK because they don't want to be kicked out of the EU as well, right?
Well, there's just a lot of confusion. It's not unique to Europe and to us. It's pretty much all over the world right now, and that's par for the course. And with this sort of era of mega confusion, the auto industry is right in the middle of it. And because of that, I think it's going to be a very interesting period. And it's not just, you know, buying and selling, mergers, acquisitions, and so on. It's the Trump policies, which could be very significant on the auto industry. It's the continuing talent shortage. It's the emergence of big things like mobility and autonomous vehicles, new manufacturing technology. Everywhere we look, we see uncertainty. And it means it's very exciting for an old guy to be watching this business rather than just go to the beach for the rest of his life.
Okay.
Well, that does sound attractive.
Well, there's some speculation that the administration is, well, they're stopping by here, I guess, later this week, and there's some speculation.
On Wednesday, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
They'll be out at the development at the Willow Run Airport, mm-hmm. which is a very significant development, I think, for Michigan. It's a large test facility for autonomous vehicles.
Right. But there's some speculation.
My guess is.
There's some speculation that they might be announcing a relaxation in the 54 mile a gallon standard. What do you think the chances of that are?
I think that's very possible, and I think it's very warranted. One of the things that we've been very concerned about when you go to very high levels of fuel economy, particularly with relatively inexpensive fuel, if we were dealing with $5 a gallon fuel, that's one thing. But when you're in the area of $2 a gallon, the cost to achieve this in terms of the model mix, the technology, and so on, would be quite high. And when you look at it from a consumer perspective, as you improve fuel economy at the margin, the value gets smaller and smaller. And as a customer, for example, would you pay an extra couple of $1,000 to save $100 a year? It may not make sense. Now, in the Obama administration, they had originally set this up so that there would be what they called a review period in 2017 and 18. They tried to push that aside and firm up this before the new administration came in. And I don't think that's something that Trump is going to say, let's go with that. I think particularly with the industry making a very strong set of comments in terms of the potential disconnect that this could create in the industry with the marketplace. For example, one of the forecasts my old organization, the Center for Automotive Research, said could cost 1 million jobs in one of the scenarios. So the value, the cost trade-off, to me, suggests that we're going to hear something from Trump about that.
The other thing is, I get the reports out of the U of M every month on fuel mileage and things like that. And you can see people, because of cheap gas, they're beginning to shift back to the big SUVs and the pickup trucks that don't get the great mileage. So that would really affect the CAFE standards, or trying to achieve this 54 mile per gallon standard as well, right?
Well, there's some aspects of this that recognize that. For example, there's a so-called footprint policy that says that if you have bigger footprint in terms of the wheelbase and the width of the vehicle, that those standards would be lower. There's also a number of credits if you're making electric vehicles or hybrid vehicles. So the real number is probably somewhere in the 40s rather than 50 plus. Mm. But even then, what we have seen here, particularly with crossovers, and the crossover is from a functionality standpoint in terms of its space and utility, is terrific. It's kind of like an efficient sport utility vehicle because it's based more on a passenger car platform, much more structurally rigid, drives like a car, and it has the utility of a larger vehicle. And this has just exploded in the marketplace. At the same time, particularly small cars have been doing very poorly, mm-hmm. and there's no significant hope that all of a sudden they're going to take off. And that is, in fact, one of the reasons I think that GM left Europe, is that the push over there for small cars, the limited profitability of those, the whole marketplace was just not very attractive. And I think that is, again, one of those interesting steps in this long emerging story that we'll see over the next couple of years.
Hey, let me skip ahead on your list to future powertrains, since we're kind of in that area right now. Everybody's pushing the hybrids, they're pushing the electric vehicles. Consumers, I'm not sure if they're really embracing them as much. So where do you see future powertrains going?
Well, I think it's a huge question mark. And anybody that tells you that they know exactly what we're going to be doing in powertrain in the future probably doesn't know exactly what they're talking about. Probably the biggest factor in terms of future powertrains is the cost of battery technology. Today, the batteries in hybrids and the pure EVs, like the Chevy Bolt or the Tesla, the Nissan Leaf, those are lithium batteries. They have more of a liquid structure inside. If that cost can be brought down under $100 a kilowatt hour, then the game gets interesting. There are a long ways from there right now. For example, I think Elon Musk the other day in a report, he was trying to sell batteries as a part of renewable energy, because if the sun isn't shining and the wind isn't blowing, you got a problem. And you want to store the electricity from renewables, but be able to put it back into the marketplace when it's needed. So you have a lot of batteries. And his mention was $250 a kilowatt hour. If you look at $250 a kilowatt hour in terms of car batteries, it's probably not realistic that we're going to see a lot of electrification. That cost is too high. Most of the industry is looking at a plug-in hybrid, something like the Chevy Volt, as a major thrust, where you can get by with a smaller battery. You can take advantage of liquid fuel to go long distances. But if you're in an urban environment, you can do most of your driving on electricity, but you have the flexibility to drive long distances. And that's kind of the big pathway right now. If batteries become less expensive, if we see solid-state lithium batteries, for example, that can be produced, and there's a lot of work going on in that area, that could be a game changer, but we just don't know the pathway right now.
Well, and that is sort of the beauty of the Volt-style hybrid, is if you've got the electric motor for low-end torque and acceleration, and then you've got the gasoline engine for long distances and higher speeds.
That's right.
You could tune for maximum mileage, which takes away from low-end torque, but it doesn't matter as much if you
That's
have
right.
the EV part of it.
Well, and then not to mention the new Volt, 250 miles or thereabouts on a charge,
yeah.
which becomes more realistic then, because before it was like 40 miles, really? You know, so.
Well, the Bolt with the V is about 50 miles now. The Bolt, which is a pure electric, is over 200 miles, but a lot depends, for example, on temperature. In Michigan, in cold weather, batteries don't perform like they do in Florida or California with warmer temperatures. Another issue that is a significant one is now you're taking a trip of 250 miles, and it's going to take you a couple of hours to charge the battery at 240 miles to be able to complete the trip at 250 miles. The rate of charge in these batteries is a problem, particularly with the liquid-based lithium batteries because of the high internal resistance. And if you stuff too much energy into it too quickly, things get really hot, and that's a problem.
Then you get a Samsung 7 Note, right? Catches on fire.
Speaking of Samsung, the best thing that's happened to Apple in the last year or so is Samsung.
Yes. Yep.
We wanted to touch on, you said you wanted to talk about the talent shortage, too. That is a very real problem in the auto industry, and I just want to know what you think are the best ways to address this. Part of it might be immigration, but that's kind of hot button right now too.
Yeah. So.
Well, immigration is interesting, particularly with the H-1B visa, which brings highly competent technical people from other parts of the world into the U.S., and that's a policy issue in the immigration problem. But one of the most basic elements of this is the recognition that the number one shortage in Michigan, for example, and this is pretty much true across the country, are skilled trades and technicians, people that can work with their hands, get their hands dirty. And for some reason, over the years, we have sort of denigrated the idea that it's okay to get your hands dirty, to have hands-on type of experience. And I just look at my old university where I was a professor of engineering for many years. Every kid in mechanical engineering every semester is doing hands-on kind of stuff, whether it's solar car, formula, SAE, classes where you design, make, test, report. That whole attitude is shifting, but it hasn't gotten across to the population yet. In fact, that's one of the reasons that we've created a group called Building America's Tomorrow, which is aimed at the future of manufacturing to get particularly young people, K through 12 kids, thinking about careers in manufacturing. And if you don't have the right background, you've got a problem. I was talking to a person at Chrysler a couple of months ago, and they're short about 2,000 diagnostic technicians in dealerships. We don't have them. And this problem is amplified now as the boomers are exiting. So in the next couple of years, we're going to be short over 2 million people in this country with the appropriate education to be a part of manufacturing. It's not just shop floor. It's engineers, it's business people, it's tool and die. And every job in this business of manufacturing today is not there for a high school dropout anymore. It requires a minimum of a two-year community college degree, and it requires a very diverse set of skills, which means that there are some great jobs if you get the right education. Now, in our case with Building America's Tomorrow, we recognize there are two groups that are particularly needy. One is getting girls more interested in STEM-type things. In engineering today, the enrollment of women is about between 20 and 25%. The other group is urban kids. We're just not getting them educated to the point where they can be a participant in manufacturing in the future, and we've got to change that. And part of it is we've got to communicate effectively just how important these jobs are. For example, a job at an auto manufacturer has an economic multiplier of 10, meaning for every job at a GM, Ford, Toyota, or whoever, there are 9 other jobs, either in suppliers or spinoff jobs.
All right, David, we've got to, I'm sorry.
Just the direct jobs.
We've run out of time here for this segment. It's always great to have you on, and we'll have you on again next month.
Great to be on.
All right, it's Building America's Tomorrow. Can people Google that? Right. There's a website for that?
Go to the website, buildingamericastomorrow.com.
Okay. All right. Thanks very much, David Cole, Chair of Auto Harvest, Chair Emeritus of the Center for Automotive Research at the University of Michigan. Thanks for being with us again. For right now, this is Matt Rausch. Great.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M Squared TechCast on PodcastDetroit.com. Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we are right back with more of the M Squared TechCast.
Yeah, we just have so much information, we can't cram it all in, you know? So, But nice segue there. I was looking over at you. We just had David Cole on talking about how they wanted to get a lot more women into manufacturing and engineering and STEM and all that. And it just so happens we have with us in Forums Tember Shea from the Engage program, which helps train second stage female entrepreneurs. And she has a guest with her who's going to, why don't you go ahead and introduce your guest?
Absolutely. Hi, guys. Thanks for having me again today.
You bet.
Today, I'd like to introduce you to Nicole Passut. Nicole has an amazing tech company, and I'm going to introduce her. Well, I guess I just did introduce her, but have her tell you a little bit about what her company is.
All right. Thank you. And thanks, Matt. Thanks, Mike, for having me. Thanks, Tember, for inviting me to do this. I appreciate it. TechStack. So TechStack, essentially, basically, is Angie's List for Technology.
Mm.
And interestingly enough, I was meeting with a startup a couple of weeks ago, and she was really frustrated about trying to find different technology providers. And she said, gosh, I wish there was an Angie's List for technology. And I said, well,
there is.
Now there is.
Yes.
Yep.
Which is great. So I think everybody can very simply understand what it is. So problem solving. What are the biggest problems? You formed the company to solve these problems. What were the reasons people were saying that they were having such problems finding the technology that they needed?
Well, if you think about the small business, medium-sized business market and enterprise, they all need technology that just was only available to large corporations, large businesses that could afford technology. But now everybody's a technology company. You cannot touch business without having technology touching every piece of your business or business processes. It's just simply permeated every piece of our business. So when we think about that, and then we think about all of the technology providers, they actually are very, very interested in connecting to this huge opportunity of the SMB market. So they're looking to be able to market to all of the, you know, small and medium sized businesses and draw them in. And the, TechStack is the platform. It's a B2B platform that helps businesses find and connect to reputable, trusted technology providers. So that was the basis really for forming the platform and forming the company. Is there's this gap, and we're solving that by providing the solution to bring those two audiences together.
So how do you find the companies that you feature on TechStack?
That is a great question. So we are actually onboarding and looking for different providers to come on to TechStack. Our initial target market is actually the IT pros or IT service providers, managed service providers. And the reason why we're going after that specific target market is because, number one, that's a pretty large market. The MSP market is looking to grow, gosh, I think it's a $154 billion market by 2019. So wow. It's a huge opportunity. And that just proves to how much the small and medium-sized businesses are looking to outsource and find managed service providers. So we're going after that managed service provider target market. And the managed service providers and the IT pros, they're not a one size fits all. They're not all inclusive. So they actually have to work with other technology providers. So what's something that's really cool about how we have built TechStack is it's not just for the small and medium sized businesses to come find their technology providers, but the technology providers can find each other and they can work with each other and essentially build out their network of reputable providers as well. So then you end up having that customer fit, right? You become better at providing end-to-end solutions for your customer.
That's great. Can you tell me how are you vetting the companies, or how are they vetting each other?
We actually have a process that we go through in terms of making sure that the tech companies are actual real companies and that they can prove that they've been in business. We look at the size of their business, exactly what services they provide, what industries do they actually specialize in or have expertise in. So we do have an entire vetting process that a company has to go through to be able to come onto the platform.
That's terrific. So I'm a small business owner. I'm looking to just get my website up and going. How would I do that signing onto TechStack?
So as a small business owner, you would be considered a user, an end user. So you would just have to create an account and then you would be able to search the database and you're able to message and connect with those providers immediately. So we have built the platform to be able to see endorsements and ratings, references of those tech providers. You can compare those tech providers. So you're really in control. So it's an open source platform, smart search, matching, and you're in control as the business of who you want to reach out to. So you can instantly message those providers and get connected right away. And it's great for them because they don't miss a lead. So it's the instant messaging perspective, then those providers aren't missing inbound leads.
Can I leap in here? You might have mentioned it and I just missed it. Is there a charge? Somewhere in this, somebody has to make money, right?
Right. So there is a charge to the actual technology providers. We are a subscription-based SaaS model. So there is a charge to those providers. And if we also do a concierge search, which means that my team matches the business up to the technology providers and helps those the business find the tech providers, then we also would have a flat fee for doing the concierge search and working with the business to match them up.
Well, you whet their appetite. They're probably, is there like, what is the starting fee or where does it start? Where does it go? Give me some guidance here, I guess.
So for the actual tech providers, we are in our beta phase. So we're just launching the platform and we're offering an introductory offer, introductory rates. So we're really at the starting point for that. And then also on the concierge search side, same scenario in being able to offer introductory rates right now.
And is that on your website? If they go there, they can find that information?
Yep, exactly. And okay. They can go to www.techstack.com, and that's the actual website that they can find us at.
Nicole, I was just curious about your background. Where have you, worked through your career? Have you been in IT? Where did this idea come from?
Well, interesting story is my husband is a managed service provider. He's an IT pro. He's had his business for, 13, 14 years. And we, about a year ago, we were talking about just the challenges and how the market has changed. Again, going back to just technology is everywhere. It's changing so fast. All the small businesses need it to some degree. The technology providers, they're looking to attract this huge small business market. So there are all of these challenges out there from marketing and sales. And if you think about it, we're an inbound, on-demand marketplace type of economy now. So when you think about that from, I can go to the internet and I can find travel sites and, service sites for maybe home repair, those different things. There was not a platform for businesses to find their technology providers. So there was this gap. And we set out to really solve that gap.
So how many clients do you have and people are you working with on your list?
Again, we're in our beta phase, so we're uploading and onboarding providers. So we're really at the start, and we're looking to grow that very quickly. It's all about marketing at this standpoint, right? Instead of location, 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 it's marketing, marketing, marketing. Mm-hmm. So we are doing some heavy marketing. We'll be out and about, and you'll start to see TechStack out and about in Ann Arbor, Detroit, throughout Oakland County. Michigan is our launch market, and it's really a great place to be launching tech stack because of everything that's going on here with over, 2,000 tech providers, even in Oakland County.
Wow. Okay. So we make it worth Timber's and Inforum's while to be here. I will ask this question rather than making Timber ask it. Talk a little bit about what Inforum has done for you in terms of getting this business off the ground.
Oh, yeah. Inforum has been great. And I'm really very privileged, actually, to be part of Inforum and their Engage Masterclass. Really getting connected to various different companies, growing my network personally and professionally. Inforum provides support for women-owned, women's-focused, tech-enabled companies. So support and growing your network and getting connected to other companies.
Yeah, the Engage Masterclass that Nicole is part of, we launched this program in 2012. Mm-hmm. Since the beginning of the program, we've had 79 women go through. This cohort's another 10, so this year it'll be 89. And they have started 38 companies. 240 jobs have been created in the state of Michigan. These women have acquired 29 patents and gone on to raise $36 million in follow-on funding that's staying in the state. So we're really pleased about that. And women, so following on the other speakers today who are on, you know, talent shortage, yes, we completely understand and we're working on that. In entrepreneurs with women in tech, and we work with the Michigan Science Center on a STEMista program for young girls.
Sure.
I was just there on Saturday, did some videos for celebrating their first anniversary.
Yeah, it's amazing. The STEMista program is fantastic. We love doing that. We also partner with other folks in the ecosystem, such as Walsh College and Michigan Women's Foundation. We have Entrepreneur U next Wednesday. It's an all-day event at Walsh College. And I know we still have some registrations open, but it's focused on female entrepreneurs. So that's really a great thing. And in May, one last shameless plug. We have our annual meeting every May, Inforum does. And this year we'll be bringing in Mae Jemison.
Oh, sure.
Who was the first African-American woman in space on the Space Shuttle Endeavor. So, And she was actually a doctor before she was an astronaut.
Yeah, she came to Lawrence Tech last fall. I did get to meet her. Very,
doctor,
very impressive.
As PhD or medical doctor?
Medical doctor.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yep. Yeah, she's the kind of doctor that can actually set a broken leg. So that's the real doctor.
That'd be a good thing to be on the space shuttle, then, right?
Absolutely. And she's also going to come in early and do some work with about 150 students in the morning. So we're really excited.
Okay, so Nicole, if you want to reach this list of vetted tech companies, where does one go for this?
www.techstack.com, and stack is STAK.
Yep. I was going to say, you need to spell that. So,
yep.
And to talk about to sign up for the award-winning Engage program, go ahead, hit that bell.
All right, go ahead.
Thank you. www.inforummichiganspelledout.org.
Okay. All right. Thanks very much, Timber Shea from Inforum, and Nicole Pasut from TechStack.
Love that name, by the way, Pasut.
Yes. It's we're so bad with names. We're just amazed. That's why I let him
take it. I would have butchered it. So.
All right. Well, thanks for being here. For right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M Squared TechCast, proudly part of the PodcastDetroit.com network. Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we're back with another segment of the M Squared TechCast. This is episode 71 now?
73.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you were one away from my high school graduation year.
So oh, I was perfect. 74. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm old. So right now we're going to have someone considerably less old. Nick Lumsden, Vice President of Technology and Product Strategy at Online Tech, Inc., the fine folks in Ann Arbor who were, trivia time, Michigan's first private internet service provider. So they've been around forever. And they
back
know
when
the,
Gary Baker owned it, way right. back
Online
when,
Tech, yes. Online Tech knows the internet inside and out, believe
yep.
you me.
Yep. And so what Nick, actually, I know a lot about this because I did some video with Nick just last week, made him a movie star. Well, we're getting that. We're going to have that produced this week for you, Nick, so you can give it to your mother. But you're going to be talking about a product you guys have, disaster recovery as a service. Why don't you kind of, the news peg there was I interviewed Jan the week before when Amazon Web Services went down for anywhere from 12 hours for some, that 5 was, hours for others.
That was bad.
But yep. a lot of people were down, and it affected me because I two of the services that I use were both down, and I was trying to figure out what was going on. And so one of the things that Jan pointed out was if they would have been working with you or I had Online Tech as their backup at the very least, they wouldn't have been down. Is that right, Nick?
That is true. Very unfortunate for those AWS customers. And I'm sure that I'd be willing to bet money that a lot of them did not have a disaster plan, or we wouldn't have seen so many services down for so long. I can tell you that during that outage, no Online Tech customer was impacted at Online Tech. Hmm. And had they been DRs and service customers of ours, they could have been back up in under 10 minutes. With minimal data loss, we've gotten some really aggressive data loss statistics. Real customers are only seeing 12-second recovery point objectives right now. So they would have been very happy. Despite the outage, they would have been happy because we would have had them back up and running.
Yeah. Well, even if they want to test your product, it's pretty easy to do too, right? I mean, even if it's not a disaster scenario, they just want to make sure everything's cool. They can do that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So this product's been out for about a year. We launched it in February of 2016, so a little over a year. And in that time, we have worked with our customers, as we do with all of our products. And the one thing that we heard repeatedly was make it easy. So this product, it's easy both to use in a crisis as well as easy to test. 4 clicks to fail over. So if you're in a crisis and you need to go, it is 4 clicks to get an application. It is just easy. But secondly, and perhaps more importantly, you're not going to be in crisis that often. We certainly hope not. You got to test this regularly though, just to make sure that your DR plan, still works. So, we've made it so that in 3 clicks, a customer can test without impacting their operations. It doesn't do anything to the production side. They can actually bring up the second side. They can see it working. They can test it. The system actually tracks these tests and remind customers when they start to approach 6 months. We think 6 months is a little bit long to go without testing.
Yeah.
So it'll contact them. And our support team, actually, if a customer doesn't test, our support team will start reaching out to them to schedule that test to make sure that our customers are staying compliant. And that's all on behalf of the customer. We want to be successful. If you go into a crisis, you do not want to be gritting your teeth and biting your nails. You want to just know it works.
Well, it must have been pretty busy for you last week with the power outage, right? I mean, what did that do to Online Tech and its operation?
Nothing. Every data center was up and running. We actually had no issues. A few, you know, blips of main power, but our systems are all backed up. M+1 generators are running and doing their job. So, we had no impact to our customers during the power outage.
So even if there's, for instance, if the grid goes down, you can still be up because you have the backup generators and all that stuff, right?
That's correct. Soup to nuts. Everything at Online Tech, whether it's our colo, our cloud, our DR services backup, it's running. Doesn't matter what's happening on the grid out there. We've got backups of backups. So our customers are going to be up and running through whatever crisis is happening.
So did you have people in who had no power at their offices, that kind of thing?
Many of them. Many of them working at Online Tech as well. So People who didn't have power at home or power at their offices, their equipment was up and running, and they're still able to service their customers.
Yeah, we just had that big windstorm come through, and I think there's still people that aren't all the way. God, I can't imagine today not having power, right?
Right.
Whew, have to burn the furniture or something, right? But that's just one example there. You had two examples. You had physical issue, and then of course, according to Bezos, the AWS issue was a human error. Somebody did something they weren't supposed to do. But in either case, it doesn't really matter. It was down, and you guys, if they dealt with you guys, they wouldn't have to worry about that, right?
That's right. That's right. And you know, the reality is most of the downtime you're going to experience is due to human error. That's why you need to have a backup plan. It's not going to be the tornado or the hurricane or the fire. I mean, those things can happen. They're rare. But it is going to be a missed keystroke, someone doing something incorrectly, whether configuring a server or accidentally shutting one down or whatever the case is. It's human error that leads to these issues. So that's the thing you have to protect against.
Well, and I know sometimes with the phone systems going down, it's been, they'll put some new code into a system and the code will turn out to be a little bit squirrely. That happens once in a while, too.
Right, right. And that, at the end of the day is really human error, too, right? You know, that's a developer that made a mistake or a QA person didn't quite catch the issue he caught. And that's where most of these problems come from. So
Now, typically, though, disaster recovery tends to be an expensive kind of endeavor. I mean, it's money you need to spend. What's the situation with online tech? Is it expensive?
Well, no. For us at Online Tech, it's not. We really worked hard to drive the cost down of the service, and that was one of our main pillars in going out and building this. The first one was to make it easy. The second one was to make it really cost effective and provide really good support to our customers. So traditionally, disaster recovery has been expensive. I mean, my 18 years of doing this, disaster recovery has always been a really hard thing, from the planning side of it to the costs up front, getting people coordinated and trying to keep it up to date. And we really tackled the costs of all those in this product. We've made it so that the 200%+ premium you have to pay to build out your disaster recovery infrastructure is now more like a 1-to-1 or less cost. And the best part is you don't have all these upfront costs. You come to Online Tech, you buy just the pieces you need, and you grow it as you go. It's by the SIP. So today you might do one application and you see how successful it is, you start adding more critical applications, and eventually scale out your infrastructure, and it's built on success. You can see how successful it is. We build the DR plan with you. That's one of the benefits of coming to Online Tech, is we have all sorts of smart people to work with you up front to help build that DR plan, and we've boiled these DR plans down to just the essentials you need in a crisis. So as you scale up, you're just getting the essentials. You know what to do when that worst day happens, if it happens.
And you have 5 data centers, if I recall, right?
That's correct. 5 data centers across Michigan and Indianapolis. Basically all of our services can be delivered out of all those data centers.
And the beauty of having the big Indianapolis one, and I know that's a real big center down there, is if something goes hooey up in Michigan, then it's backed up down there, right? I mean, so that there's no loss of data or anything like that?
That's right. Many of our Michigan customers opt to have their disaster recovery environment in Indianapolis, which is fantastic. We have a wonderful, Fortune 500 class infrastructure down there running our cloud services and keeping that data there and ready to go. In the same respect, a lot of our customers in Indiana are replicating their workloads up to Michigan. So gets them about 250 miles, 300 miles apart.
And a separate utility and a separate set of data connections and all that good stuff too, right?
It is. It is. Totally different paths, totally different utility.
All right. And we probably should give them, let me stop before I go that far and just say, now, since the AWS outage, has there been a spike in interest that you've noticed where people are inquiring about your service, or people that you are already working with that didn't have the disaster recovery as a service are now saying, maybe I should get this? Are you seeing any activity in that area?
Yeah, there's a lot of discussions going on, especially since, of course, we started talking to potential prospects that was happening and you know, messaging out to our customers. But yes, we have. And you know, really, what that messaging is about, or what those conversations are about, is hybrid. You know, hybrid IT, hybrid cloud is the future. We see that as the destination. It's not that workloads are just going to exist in a co-location data center, or just in an online tech cloud, or just in AWS or Azure, or wherever your workloads are. There's each business has workloads that should go in various places, whether physical hardware or online tech co-location, or maybe online tech backup services or DR services or Azure AWS. We are seeing a lot of conversations about that.
So these the CIOs already knew about it, but the guys who write the checks, the CFOs and the guy that make them write the checks, the CEOs, they're now very focused on this. They realize this can happen, right?
Yeah, that's exactly it. And it's, you're going to see us talking about this in next quarter. This is our release of hybrid cloud. It has a huge advantage for CFOs. You're managing the billing in public cloud, surprises that you get on your bill in public cloud is extremely complex. I think Netflix recently said that their bill from AWS was a million lines long. How do you discern what you're buying? So there's a lot of power in companies like ours who can help you really manage those costs and manage those workloads and make sure that the right ones are going to the right place. Make sure you put the workloads that should go in colo and colo, the ones in public cloud, and the ones that should be persistent in online tech cloud.
Yeah, it sort of reminds me, a million line bill reminds me of the companies that were making a lot of money in the 80s deciphering your phone bill. It sounds like somebody now needs to decipher your internet bill.
Yeah.
That's right.
Hey, and the beauty is instead of having to deal with some guy in Seattle or someplace like that, you can go see Jan right there in Ann Arbor and sit down with him if you want to talk to him, right?
One throat to choke, absolutely, as they say, right?
I know Jan real well, so he'd probably invite you in, give you a cup of coffee. You know, he's a great guy. So.
Yep. And he'll give you a tour of the data center when you want, practically, too. I mean, it is fun to go in and watch the blinking lights once in a while.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was looking at a couple of the videos that you were in that I did not shoot. And you were mentioning that you have even the data centers are redundant. The left side, right side. Why don't you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So we everything we do, we're building it with our customer's experience in mind. And you know, part of that experience is, you know, bad things can happen. You know, the pieces of hardware can fail, et cetera. So, yeah, of course, you know, inside of our data centers, there's, you know, multiple UPSs. It's all built on N+1 power infrastructure, delivered out to the racks with, you know, an A side and a B side, for our customers to be able to plug into in case one of those pieces of hardware fails. Same with our network. Our networks are fully redundant. They're self-healing. We've gone through some major network upgrades in the past year and a half, to really upgrade that technology and make them react in a split second when something goes wrong. So, you know, at the end of the day, we want our customers to have an exceptional experience. We want them to have that white glove experience. You know, that's really what our customers come to us for.
All right. Thanks very much. Nick Lumsden, Vice President of Technology and Product Strategy at Online Tech, Inc. in Grand Rapids. That is Grand Rapids, Ann Arbor.
No, Ann Arbor.
I must have Grand Rapids on the brain. I don't know why.
Yeah,
but it's Online Tech, Inc. in Ann Arbor, and that's onlinetech.net, right?
.com.
Okay.
And then tell them where they can find more information about the disaster recovery.
Yeah, about the DR products. Yeah.
Absolutely. You can come out to www.onlinetech.com/DRAAS for more information on our DRAS products. You can also just pick up the phone and give us a call. We'd love to talk to you. 734-213-2020.
All right. Thanks, Nick. Appreciate it. And thanks to all our guests today, Inforum's Tem Bershay and her client, Nicole Pursuit, founder and CEO of TechStack, automotive expert David Cole, always fascinating, and Richard Laramie, president of Electromatic Ventures.
So you've been listening to M Squared TechCast. We hope you join us again next week. But until then, this is Mike Brennan.
And Matt Rausch.
and we'll see you then.
Thanks for listening to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Join your hosts Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan next Monday at 3 p.m. If you can't listen live, audio podcasts of the show can be found at podcastdetroit.com.